Hour number two of the Dr. Future Show, straight ahead.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never... Hey, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. In this hour, we're going to be talking with Bruce Erickson about the 2015 United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP21. It's an event that was held in Paris last month from November 30th to December 12th. It was the 21st yearly session. The conference of the parties, or COP, negotiated what they called the Paris Agreement, which was a global agreement on the reduction of climate change. The text of which represented a consensus of representatives of 196 parties. This agreement will become legally binding if joined by at least 55 countries, which together represent at least 55% of global greenhouse emissions. And they'll need to sign this in New York between April 22nd, that's Earth Day coming up, and April 21st, 2017. For it to really take hold. However, there were a lot of other things that went on there, and we're looking forward to getting more of a comprehensive perspective of what actually happened at COP21 from Bruce Erickson. Bruce Erickson is a fellow futurist, writer, speaker, international management consultant, and he's been very much in the forefront of looking at issues of sustainability, regenerative systems for building communities and healthy bioregions. He's here to help educate us about what actually happened there. So, Bruce Erickson, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be on board.
Yeah, great. Great. So you went there yourself from your habitat of Santa Barbara all the way to Paris.
Well, there's a Dutch institution that was involved in the activities in Paris, and they were my hosts, and they requested that I come on board and be part of their delegation that went to Paris. So that was very fortuitous. And since they had, should I say, well wired into it, I hadn't actually planned on going, but they had set everything up in motion. So that made it.
So you were there.
Much easier. And I should say, given all that went on in Paris, you definitely needed a guide. Believe me. Okay.
Well, let's look at it. You actually were there. Some of the official reports out of there suggested that that this ratification needs to happen, that it's a big question mark whether or not anything will actually come of this. What's your interpretation?
I would like to frame this for your listeners a little differently, because when I read all the reports, and I've read so many other views on it, but I think there's there's significant parts of this that are missing.
Okay.
The significant parts, first of all, was the fact is that COP21 and the related events that went on there. Number one is, even as a couple months before they took place, there was no mention whatsoever of world leaders attending the events in Paris. I mean, it was only very swiftly happened within a couple of weeks before the event that all of a sudden leaders from over 150 countries, I might add, unprecedented in recorded history, there's never been a group of world leaders that large to assemble under the roof at any one time. It's never happened before. I think that one of the things that I read on this is, irrespective of the agreement and everything else, is there was an undercurrent of imperative urgency, and by their mere presence that would happen underscored the seriousness of the importance of the Paris events.
Was there no doubt then that climate change is happening and it's really serious?
Well, yes, and I think that it's just not only climate, it's the fact is that we've done a pretty good job of making a mess of our environment in many ways. And I think that for all the naysaying that has gone on or foot dragging or what have you, both by countries and corporations and individual institutions such as the Republican Party of the United States, the mere fact that such a gathering took place and the fact is that the attempt and the negotiation of that climate treaty took place, it literally, and I might add one other factor too, the Pope Francis encyclical that preceded all of this was another very, very important document. And what it did, I feel in my sense, is it gave a mandate, a license, a go-ahead to not only governments, but institutions and NGOs of every sort all over the globe, that there is a recognition that we're having serious environmental problems on a multiplicity of fronts, and they need to be addressed. There isn't any margin for excuses anymore. And that's one thing I don't see in any of the news being emphasized here. But owing to the myriad of people that I had talked to at the event and the delegates and everything else, is what I find it was a tremendous empowerment. After all, who throws a party for the earth that involves people from almost 200 countries around the world? I mean, I've certainly been to a lot of UN events, and that I've never seen happen except in the official UN meetings that take place. But the civilian sector and all the rest of the sectors were well represented there, too.
A lot of NGOs, and for example.
Yes. There were professors from universities, there were local governments, there were mayors, there were all a tremendous amount of indigenous groups from all over the world, from every corner of you could imagine. Might well add, they were very vocal, very well organized. You had people from every walk of life, and some citizens just took it upon themselves they had to show up and see what was happening. I don't even think the French government has a real handle of how many people came to Paris, but I can just tell you it was a huge number.
Wow. We got to go to a break for a second, and we actually have a phone call already for you.
We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Dr. Fisher Show. We're talking with Bruce Erickson about COP21. The conference on the Paris Agreement for global warming, climate change, just happened last month in Paris. We have a caller, Zach, who has a question for our guest, Ms. Future. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, like, I think everybody's for protecting the earth we live on, you know, and it's a really valiant cause. But I think that conspiracy is concerned. I'm concerned that it's like a government, like another tax, that out of my mouth. So it's like the ultimate tax in that everyone breathes carbon out of their mouth. So, you know, if our reforming of the carbon climate with taxation and politics, I would be much more comfortable, you know?
Okay, well, let's see what Bruce has to say about that. Bruce, what do you have to say about the carbon tax?
Okay, here's the situation, is that the carbon tax situation is, first of all, very complex, okay? From my observations, and while I'm not a scientist, I'll be up front, is I think, for one thing, it is very hard to determine. It's not as simple, easy as one might think. The other part of it is the carbon trading that it was originally proposed, okay, in the Kyoto event and then started to surface in 2005. Frankly, was an unmitigated disaster. I attended a very strategic forum by the Danish government, and that was rifled with fraud and poor use of resources and all kinds of things that had gone wrong with that. I think that while I hear what the caller is saying and the idea of taxing it, and while I think that some kind of initiative in that direction, well thought out, needs to be considered and probably implemented. My take on it is that I think we have to also address it from another angle, too.
What's that?
The other angle is, if there's no planet, there's no business, period, okay? That every company of any size, any institution, has a vested interest in being proactive in assuring that the fact of the resources and the fact that we have a sustainable Earth for a future, period. That's a mandate. I gave a speech in Paris in which I said, one of the problems that you have is a philosophical one. The philosophical one is this. In the last several hundred years, in a Judeo-Christian tradition, there has been the philosophical mandate that nature's to serve us and we can do anything we want with it, and it's for us to use and abuse, and history has certainly shown that to be the fact. And we've lived under that environmental mandate. I served some years ago on a forum for the environment in Silicon Valley, and I had one very senior executive in one of the high-tech companies look across the table. He said, the environment, that's nothing more than a litigation expense. And I think it's an attitude, first of all, somebody else is going to take care of it. Second of all, why should I spend the money on my watch? Because my only judge, when I'm talking about corporations now, I'm only judged for what the profits I bring into the company. That's a wrong model, okay? Scandinavia has a little different model in corporations. And if I'm going off on a tangent here, I'm trying to paint a picture here that says we need to address these issues holistically. And while carbon is the issue that people have brought up most, I can tell you for a fact there was a whole raft of issues that were brought up in Paris, and I can go into that during this interview. But for the right now, I would say to your listener, I appreciate your question. I think that one has to look at it more comprehensively and do it in a way that ensures the necessary cooperation in implementing such a program.
Okay, well, you know, thank you, Bruce.
I think, Bruce, I'm going to take a second here and just summarize the big agreements that they came to. If the Paris Agreement is ratified, then what that means in terms of carbon taxing, it's not a direct issue. What is discussed here is that the countries who follow the agreement will end fossil fuel subsidies. So they'll stop paying businesses to use fossil fuel, which artificially keeps the price of it low and makes it hard for other forms of energy to compete. They will put a tax on carbon pollution. And as you say, that'll need to have a little bit more of a global holistic approach to it that needs to be understood. They will work towards a political consensus around pollution and eliminating it, and they will invest in greener technologies. So that is what the Carbon Accord is all about, the Paris Accord.
And I agree with you on that, and you summed it up very well. And thank you for that, Sun. Okay.
Sure.
Now, what about working towards a political consensus with finding common ground with, like, climate skeptics?
Is there I want to say one thing about climate skeptics is that here we are in Paris. There's not that many Americans there. There was just only a certain amount of exhibits and everything else, but everybody's trying to do their best. And then the Republican Party, while the conference is going on, announces, and that announcement carried widely through the European media, was the fact that we don't care what happens in Paris. We're not going to ratify anything back here anyway. That was such an international embarrassment for any effort that the United States has been forth. But I, as an American, was just appalled at such arrogant stupidity coming out of the Republican Party.
We have another caller.
Billy Sunshine.
Go ahead.
Okay. Billy?
Hey, kids.
Hey.
Kids, my favorite show. My favorite show.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks. I know you're not talking about, because you're on quite a few shows these days that are pretty good, too.
You still are my favorite show. So there.
Thanks.
Thanks.
The holistic solution, look, the enemy of the planet is capitalism. Capitalism controls the political system. We saw capitalism, for example, take down this country. The banks wouldn't back off. You know, which of the banks was going to say, okay, I'll stop first? It's capitalism.
Have you seen The Big Short?
Not yet.
You should
but,
see it.
You know,
oh,
I know what it is.
Yeah, go see it. That's a fabulous movie.
Yeah.
It'll make me laugh and it'll make me angry. Those are the results I'll have. But it's capitalism, folks. That's the problem, really. We got to fix that. If we can fix capitalism, if we can reinterpret it in a new way, we don't have to walk away from making money, but we really do need to get rid of capitalism.
So, are you voting for Bernie?
Oh, sure. Oh, no doubt about it.
I got a Facebook from a friend of mine named Joe Williams, who lives here in Santa Cruz, and he wants to run for Congress. He says, send a real socialist to Congress. Vote for Joel Williams.
Somebody should. We do need a real lefty to run for Sam's seat, not just somebody that we recognize their name, whose daddy, you know, was a politician. That's a good start. And by the way, I'm committing, if I win the lottery, to run for president. I will run against Trump.
Great.
All right. How many tickets did you buy?
None yet.
You got a few hours.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So what do you think, Bruce? Capitalism is the problem?
Well, I think that's kind of simplistic. Let me put a different spin on that. I've done a lot of interface with Europe and particularly Scandinavia, where my family lives. And this is something that was implemented in Sweden a couple of decades ago, that a company was judged by the security analysts in Stockholm, not just by the return on investment, but what was their green plan, what was their environmental plan, what was their value of intellectual capital, the value really of the employees that made the company work impossible, and also what was their initiatives in the communities they operated from and had plants and had a sizable presence in terms of the general welfare of the community. And they had a complex scoring method in analyzing that. What they found out was the companies that scored well in all those sectors invariably did better overall. They were less affected by downturns in economies. They had more customer loyalty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We got some more calls. Do you want to talk to you?
We have to go to a hard break right now. Colonel Terry, do whatever you need to do. We're going to be back right after.
Look forward to hearing from Colonel Terry after the break. I hope you can stay on there, Colonel.
Sure.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Bruce Erickson about the 2015 UN Climate Change Conference in Paris last month, to which he attended. We got a couple callers on the line. All right, Colonel Terry.
Hi, gentlemen, and very smart lady.
Hi, Colonel Terry.
Happy New Year.
Mrs. Future proves can be both smart and beautiful, doesn't she, gentlemen?
She does. She warms my heart just thinking of that.
Oh, Colonel Terry, I just have to believe everything you say.
Should. I always speak truthfully, and I speak wisdom, and I speak from experience at places like the White House Science Office and the Pentagon.
And deep caring and deep passion. I really respect your approach to life.
That's why my email includes good guy. Your guest, tell me in a phrase his background.
Bruce, do you want to give him your background?
Oh, boy, that's a long one. My background originally was more of a management consultant and marketing, but I became aware of a lot of environmental concerns and everything else because of work I did in Canada. You might say my professor was Christian Dalotte, who, along with Robert Mueller, was one of the couple of the key figures that started all the early environmental conferences out in Stockholm.
Exactly.
Sweden.
So you've been smart about the reality of the environment and the ecological disaster our species is committing to the planet.
Oh, very much so. I've participated in a whole bunch of forums and UN meetings. The list is a very long one. You can look at my website at brucelerickson.com, and you can see a lot of that.
Okay. We'll do that. And where are you based, sir?
I'm based in Santa Barbara, California.
Okay. When do you get to Santa Cruz again?
I try to get there as often as possible. Alan and Son are very dear friends of mine for many years, and I try to get up that way. Yeah, I also had a project, an international project, about 3 years ago we completed. We were commissioned in part by the Japanese government and the foundation over there about the sustainability of the nation of Japan. I was the lead organizer of that study.
My erudition, your website, and others listening, it is Bruce Erickson.
Bruce L. Erickson.
Oh,
Bruce L. Erickson.
Erickson.com.
This E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N.
E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. Yeah,
yeah, Bruce L.
Good. And the name of your organization?
It's Mother Earth Media.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I'm from Washington, D.C., and a lot of years I get back there still on business and other things. And because I've spent so many years in Washington, Bruce, I can prove to you there's such a thing as a free lunch.
Yeah. Well, I can well imagine. I lived in Washington, D.C. I did a lot of work with the World's Future Society and other activities back there, so I know what you speak of. Yeah.
Anyway, I will also prove to Dr. and Mrs. Future that there's a free lunch.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll all go to a great lunch, please.
You buying?
And I'll send you how to find me, too, if you don't mind, at your website.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Much appreciated.
My comments, and then I want to be brief and to the point. I observed this in the late 90s at the White House Science Office. That is the environmental realities. And I'll tell you how serious it is. You know the Gaia theory by Lovelock, James Lovelock?
Mm-hmm. I know of it, yes.
Yeah, which is fundamentally we poisoned the planet beyond recovery, and there will be Gaia, meaning the Earth Mother's revenge on us. And I say that because I worked with Nader when I was young and idealistic, and I worked with a number of it in environmental advocacy, and also inside the government as a senior Air Force officer, trying to get focus and reality on how serious the trends were. And Bill Clinton, after we got him fully informed, we did it on a Saturday when he couldn't take, be interrupted or have any bimbos distract him. We for several hours, and we the true experts, James Hansen and others, and Bill Clinton said in the mid-90s, repeatedly at other meetings later, I can't tell the American people these facts and the truth about the environment. They won't like me. His ego and self-centeredness and sociopathy was so bad, his own popularity was more important than discussing reality.
Well, a true politician.
Huh? Well, that's true. A true sociopath, actually, too. Yeah. I mention that because the oil companies have so fabricated the science, so fabricated, corrupted our national dialogue and conversation on facing the realities that our species is too plentiful, too polluting, and, et cetera, on the face of the planet. If we cared and valued the future, and if we valued informed wisdom and our ethical, environmental, ecological obligations, we would transition promptly to solar, geothermal, stored electrons, and off of fossil fuels, as well as limit the number of children people can have. I'm sad to say. So I want to share, that's how I see the reality. I've worked with all kinds of idealistic groups, bioneers and others. Could we move along and get this? I think the political corruption of the right wing, especially, the reluctance of some purported liberal progressives, the cowardice of Obama, because I know the briefings he was given, the same things we gave Clinton 25 years ago. The cowardice of our politicians, the manipulations, and the tragedy that the Christian right thinks God would not permit them to ruin the planet. Okay. Mm. With that, I'm curious, what is your reaction, Mr. Erickson, to that? Or is it Dr. Erickson?
Well, it's not Dr. Erickson. I frankly will agree with you on every one of those points. I've been in part of high-level briefings and that, but let me say this. I think that one of the difficulties you have is in the United States itself. If I'm in other countries, in Scandinavia, in Europe, and elsewhere, and I've got friends, I dialogue with people in about 20 different countries, I would say there is much more of a willingness to face the situation more realistically than all the kind of, what I'm going to try to say is the all the different factions in the United States. I mean, to get anything done here, environment or other things, is difficult. There's just too much fractionalization of special interests and all the political spin doctoring. You got 200 organizations in Washington whose sole job is to distribute bullshit. Pardon me, my saying so, but I'm very well aware of what you speak. I have a sense, though, and I'm going to give you a little different insight on this. And it's not just carbon tax, it's destruction of the soils and rivers and everything else.
There's
a phenomenon going on, and anthropologists know this well, it's called retarding lead. And retarding lead is when a group of people in a country or situation decide that they grasp onto pieces of knowledge or experience and they jump ahead of so-called sophisticated civilizations.
Sure.
Behind the scenes, I was with Charles Eisenstein. I was doing a forum with Democracy Now! And Charles Eisenstein when I was in Paris. And Charles and I went to dinner, and he said, Bruce, he said, there's at least 19 companies around the world that have got either cold fusion or absolutely revolutionized energy machines and everything else. I think you're going to see extremely advanced technology being implemented probably everywhere else except in the United States, okay? And people, groups will take action. And there's another factor in this is just in human consciousness. I think there's a striving thing within human consciousness itself, collectively all over the world, that's going to impact this equation too. I totally agree with you. In the United States, we live in a very conservative country within regards to the environment. Very extremely conservative.
Well, lastly, let me say, leaning back in my chair in May of 98 in the White House science office, I concluded to save this national society ecologically and even other ways, and our planet will require what Terry concluded will be achievable miracles. And I, off the air, I'll take your reaction to this. And you make reference to achievable miracles, fusion, et cetera. Yes, it's probably being obstructed by the oil companies. And Naomi Klein's most recent book, the title escapes me, Mrs. Future, you'd know, where she exposes, yes, capitalism and its greed, greedy capitalism, unrestrained capitalism, not tempered by respect for wisdom and, if you will, ethics, which is a word maybe 10 out of 100 Americans could possibly begin to understand and define. Her point is that we have to have an attitude, yes, a new value system, as Mr. Erickson makes reference to. So do you agree with me? What you're making reference to are the equivalent of my conclusion in May of 98 would be achievable miracles, sir.
That's a great, great
phrase. With that. I was with Naomi Klein there in Paris, and the thing is, one of the things she brought up, and your listeners should know this, that any trade agreement trumps the environmental agreement. If it gets in the way of a trade agreement, let's say a regulation or some types of ruling protecting the environment, it gets in the way of the trade agreement overrides it. I was actually not aware of that. And when she brought it up in the forum, there was, by the way, when she spoke that night, there was 5,000 to 6,000 people in Paris in attendance. It was unbelievable.
We need enough smart, ethical, honorable people worldwide in charge of our governments and, if you will, voting and pressing our national conversations to challenge us to be ethical and honorable, as I think you and I agree.
You're bringing up a really important point. I think really underscoring what happened in Paris is the world's leadership was given a mandate, and if they cease to perform, they better head for the unemployment office because they're no longer needed.
Listen, folks, we have to go for a break. Thanks for a great back and forth on this stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks, okay. Colonel Terry.
Thanks, Colonel Terry. We'll be right back with the Dr. Future Show. So hang on the line.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Bruce L. Erickson about COP21, the climate change conference in Paris, which he recently attended. We have another caller on the line, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. You have a question about climate change for our guest, Bruce Erickson?
Hi, Dr. Future. Hi, Mrs. Future.
Hey there.
Hello, Bruce.
Hi.
Say, I had a question regarding the Paris conference. I'm looking through the minutes. There was a representative that had used some ambiguous language. I don't want to get too conspiratorial here, but there was language during the conference that said there, quote, may or may not be additives in jet aircraft fuel for the purpose of solar radiation management. And what I had also read is that if the agreements are ratified coming out of Paris, that no one would be accountable if, quote unquote, that were true. Can you speak to that at all?
Glad you brought up that question. Geoengineering was very much on the table in Paris, and there was a wide degree of awareness on it, and the attitude was totally hostile to it in Europe. I can tell you that. It was widely exposed and challenged in their direction.
Oh, Bruce, can you...
I mean, that's clever language, but the thing is that that is something that, as far as I could see, was completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify for the audience, in case you obviously know, but in case some of the audience might not know what geoengineering is, if you could just give us a brief description of that.
Well, essentially, it's chemtrails. I mean, we have a serious issue with it in the United States, and chemtrails have been... and sprayed in a number of other countries. I'm not exactly sure totally what other countries have them. I'm sure they're not in Russia or in New Zealand and a number of other places, but it is basically, in what they've deciphered the United States is, it's coal ash mixed with a whole variety of other materials. Sometimes the formulas vary, but I can say one thing. If you look at the effects of respiratory illness in the United States, which has increased substantially. There's a real problem with it. Pardon that phone ringing, but...
Thanks for your call, yeah. Michael. Anything else you want to say, Michael?
You know, I kind of was in a quandary about how things like this can begin to be acknowledged, but it's that old sort of wave of the hand. Yes, it may or may not be happening, but we don't need to worry about it. And now it's almost as if the nutcases with the chemtrail type stuff is becoming not only vindicated, but it's like out in the open now. Is that where we stand?
Here's my take on it, is that, first of all, I was really surprised to the openness that chemtrails and internet and geoengineering were brought out and everywhere. And the awareness was extremely high. It was no longer in the back door or hidden back there. There was a high degree of awareness. I think that also might have to do with the fact of the number of documentaries that have come out of Europe, particularly from Italy, about the subject. Italy produced an amazing documentary on the subject. There was nothing hidden in the back about it at all. I can't speak specifically to the Paris Agreement about that, but let me just say this, is that Paris brought out not only the issue of carbon and fossil fuels, but just about anything and everything we're doing to damaging the environment. You know, all of that was brought out, and in many ways.
So you heard people talk about other geoengineering projects like HAARP, as well as the air pollutions from the...
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there was... Let me put this way. I just was handed a note that chemtrails also contribute to the effect of increase in Alzheimer's because of the aluminum sprayed in the air.
Now, what was the purpose of chemtrails? Is there a really good purpose for them, or is that pure speculation?
I would say lunatic fringes in Washington, D.C., looking for new ways to get a defense contract.
I would encourage your listeners to look into the solar radiation management aspect of it in dimming sunlight. It's sort of a roundabout way to cool the Earth, and it's designed to masquerade as something that will help Earth, but really what it is doing is it is raining barium and aluminum down on our populations. And I think that when you get around all the conspiratorial language and get past that and look to the facts, I would ask your listeners to really look into the facts surrounding this and not ignore it.
Okay. And let me give you a very practical view of that thing. If you look at back in the history several decades ago, before emission controls were in L.A. and Southern California, and we had all kinds of smog, what did we have? We also had a lot of additional heat. And when emission controls came out and the air got relatively clearer, a lot of that heat dissipated. So the argument that it protects us from solar radiation and increase a way to express it, it's just, there's even the people with environmental sciences are saying that as well.
All right. Thanks, Michael, for a lot of good thoughts.
Thanks, Bruce, for bringing that out in the open. I super appreciate it.
I thank you for the question.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye, Dr. Future. Bye, Ms. Future.
Bye, Michael.
Thanks for calling, Michael. Boy.
Yeah, well... It sounds like the climate change conversation was about every aspect of sustainable living on the planet. It was not just pollution. It was really about...
I'll give you a simple one, and this affects us in California. It's all the chemicals that have gone into our soil because of so-called modern agriculture techniques. What that is destroyed a lot of the microbial interaction, the porosity of the soil to hold moisture. So while we complain about a drought... In reality, what we've done is literally killed a lot of the microbial and the porosity of the soil that would normally hold moisture. So our drought is not only caused by the absence of rain, it's also about soil management as well.
How about investment in greener technologies? Was there much of evidence of that at the Paris event?
Well, I would say... There was a brief 2-day forum on environmental technologies, but mostly, let me describe it this way, is the awareness. But when you talk about environmental technologies, there was a wonderful exhibit done by an organization in Paris, which they literally went out to schools all over the world and asked the children in a grade school, junior high, or high school level, what is their idea for environmentally affected things that people can implement in their homes or on a small scale. And their exhibit there that they had was absolutely an incredible piece of brilliance. What these children were seeing, very simple things that could be done. It was one of the star attractions on the NGO side at Le Bourget.
Oh, beautiful.
That was a really inspiring.
Glad to hear the kids had something to say on this. We have another caller, Mrs. Future.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show. Did you have something to say
about
global warming?
Actually it does, but it has to do with diesel.
Diesel.
So I run a lot of diesel trucks, and I remember back in the day, we never had to smog our diesel trucks. And now they put a lot of additives and other things in the diesel, and everybody has seen the diesel prices go through the roof. Now they've gone back down. I'm just very curious as to the diesel pollution, if anybody can just add on to that or tell me what's going on. I'd appreciate it, and
That's a good question. I'll get off the line. Thanks.
Well, don't ask for Volkswagen for solutions.
I heard there's some interesting software.
Yeah, I'll make one comment on this. It's an unqualified comment because part of my family is in the trucking business in Sweden. And I know in the past decades, they've told me that they quit using regular diesel fuel and they were using rapeseed oil in their diesel trucks. And they claimed they actually had lower maintenance costs and more efficient burning with it. Now, I don't think that's practical in North America, but the thing is that I know that in Scandinavia, they've been looking at alternatives for a long time. I don't have anything specific to say about that. I think that's the Society of Automotive Engineers would be a better place to look for solutions on that
score. Good insight, though, about additives and everything raising the price. I was shocked to find out how much more expensive diesel had become.
Oh, so you're on the same page I am. And the weird thing is that I'm still bewildered why it all of a sudden became a big issue when the prices went through the roof, and everybody wonders why all the prices of all your commodities that you're buying in a store and everything went up. Mm-hmm. It's because now you have basically a tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four that you have to run. Like I run heavy equipment too, like big diesel.
Okay, well, listen, Mike, this is our, we got a hard break,
but thanks
so
for calling.
Thank you.
See you later, bye.
All right,
bye.
Take care. BruceLErickson.com, right?
Yes.
Okay, if you want to know more about Bruce and the climate change, I guess you keep things up to date there.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Bruce, for being on the show.
Okay, thank you for being on the show, and I thank everybody who called.
Yes, absolutely.
Great talking with you, Bruce. Thanks for everything.
Thanks for
the update. God
bless. Okay. And thank you so much for listening this week. We'll see you next week in the Dr. Future Show. We'll be covering some really interesting new inventions coming from CES next week.
This is Dr. Future Show on KSCO Santa Cruz. Thanks for listening.